Oh, no, I was ready to go, too. I was following you, dude. You're rubbish.
All right, council, thank you for waiting, and sorry for the delay. The next case on the calendar today is A18-1313, Sarah Ann Zahosky versus Thomas Warren Johnson. I believe only counsel for appellant is here today. You will have 15 minutes for your argument, no rebuttal time. You could please introduce yourself and the party you represent, and you can begin when you're ready. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Kelly McSweeney for the appellant, Mr. Thomas Johnson. And this case comes before this court following an order for protection that was entered on June 12, 2018 by the trial court. This appeal followed. There was no briefing by respondent who was pro se. This case is regarding the sufficiency of evidence needed within a subsequent order for or an order for protection when the court is determining reasonable fear. The standard here is whether the court abused its discretion in issuing this order because the order was not supported by the evidence. We ask that the court, even considering this deferential standard, find that in favor of the appellant because the district court did abuse its discretion in ordering an OFP without a finding of reasonable fear. Briefly, the parties were divorced in 2010. They have two minor children together. During their marriage, the parties had many problems. Appellant suffered with alcohol abuse and has been sober since he was since 2007. In 2003, there was an incident of alleged abuse, and respondent 2002, but the order was actually issued in 2003.
Okay.
So there was an alleged incident of domestic abuse, and respondent obtained an order of protection in Wright County, which they were living at that time. In 2003, the OFP issued without findings because my client agreed to allow the OFP to issue. He was young. He was unrepresented, and he did not think that that was going to follow him for the rest of his life. It's worth noting that the order for protection from 2003 was not offered at trial, the actual order.
Right, but you don't contest that the one was actually issued.
Absolutely, Your Honor, okay. Yes. There was very little evidence of any of the contemporaneous description of events leading up to that OFP on the record. Appellant
but testified. But there was testimony.
Oh, absolutely, okay. Your Honor. Yes, and respondent did testify extemporaneously about the events that she remembered 16 years ago.
And I'm just looking at the order, and I assume you're appealing the first order that's in your addendum, correct?
Correct.
All right. And one thing that the judge seemed to be very clear on is the credibility of the parties. And
absolutely.
And as you know, our review is limited in that we defer to those credibility determinations.
Thank you, Aaron. I'm glad you brought that up because actually, what we're asking the court to look at is first the sufficiency of the evidence. Whether or not the respondent is credible, there still has to be evidence. If we take everything that she says as true, there still needs to be sufficient evidence, and we'll go into that. But as far...
How is the evidence insufficient, though?
Okay. And let me just also address the credibility issue. And the credibility issue, and I understand that this is not a trier of fact, but the credibility issue, unlike most cases that come before the court like this, we have a determination of credibility with regard to respondent. We have history, significant history, from 2009 and 2010 at the time of the divorce.
Right, but one, even if we, sitting as a district court, would have found her not to be credible, that doesn't matter on appeal. And two, a person, a district court and a fact finder in general, can look at somebody's testimony and say, I find that not to be credible, but I find this testimony to be credible. So the fact finder can determine what is and is not credible.
Absolutely, Your Honor. However, some of the facts that were testified to now, and I brought this up in my brief, and it is regarding actually Warren, because it within this order for protection in 2018, the respondent asked for an order for protection for both herself and the children.
Correct.
And actually, 90% of the testimony at trial was regarding their son, Warren. The court then dismissed the order for protection for the children and allowed the order for protection to issue regarding respondent only. So in that history, we look at a lot of the testimony that was taken. Well, some of it was some of the testimony from respondent was regarding Warren and his therapist. And the respondent testified that the therapist was lying regarding whether or not the children in 2010 had to go to a domestic abuse program. The reason I bring this up, Your Honor, is because that was already determined that she was not credible on that issue in 2010.
Right. So, but doesn't that actually work against you in the sense that the district court looked at that testimony and said, no, I don't find that credible, so I'm not going to allow the OFP to continue with regard to the child. But in terms of the testimony with respect to whether or not she was reasonably in fear, and second, whether or not there was a violation of 2002-2003 prior OFP, that the district court did find her credible as to that information.
And just as to that piece of your question, Your Honor, regarding whether or not there was a violation of the 2002 order, the court was clear that that was not what she was basing her order on.
I thought the district court did base its order on that as well.
The court based the order on... And she's very clear. She says primarily the...
Primarily, but that doesn't mean exclusively. The district court also found that respondent credibly testified that appellant had violated the previous order by sending respondent a threatening email.
True.
That was, that's an addendum on page 9.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And... but she was finding that there was reasonable fear, not that there was a violation.
I think... The district court found both.
If I may. The court in its order, page 9, says the petitioner is reasonably in fear of physical harm from respondent. And says that respondent, meaning the appellant, previously pled guilty to disorderly conduct, and petitioner credibly testified to prior acts of domestic abuse and behaved in a threatening manner toward her, and such behavior had escalated recently. And then this...
So are you just contesting the reasonable fear finding?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Well, we're contesting the sufficiency of the evidence of reasonable fear.
I'm sorry, but before you go to that, I do want to, if you look at the next, mm-hmm. I think it's the next sentence or two, on that paragraph 25, it says, although not necessary for this order for protection, petitioner also testified credibly that respondent has violated a prior order for protection that she obtained in 2002 in Wright County by sending her or having a third party send her a threatening email. And one of the one of the bases on which we can affirm the district court under statute 518B01 subdivision, I'm not even going to list the whole subdivision, it's too long.
Six B, yes.
Is that respondent violated a prior OFP.
Right.
And number two is petitioner is reasonably in fear of physical harm from respondent.
Right, and I think where we might differ in our reading is where the court says, although not necessary. So the court was basing its decision primarily on reasonable fear.
Right. But I think the district court was basing it primarily on reasonable fear, but also did note and did say she testified credibly that that provision also could support the OFP.
And again, but we need to look at the sufficiency of the evidence. And going back to the sufficiency of the evidence regarding reasonable fear, the court... It's noted that recent case law, the Thompson case in 2018, allows that for a subsequent order for protection, we don't need to make any finding for domestic abuse. Domestic abuse is already determined. And at that point, the court moves on to subdivision 6B.
Well, and I'm very familiar with the Thompson case. In Thompson, the husband didn't even live in the state. He lived in California.
Correct.
For 3 years and had never been in the state, and they were talking about abuse that took place during the marriage, and the court found reasonable fear, even though there really was no contact. In that circumstance, how is this any, you know, how can that be stronger than that case?
Well, in that case, Your Honor, there was... Fear. You're correct. The facts were egregious. There was emotional, physical, and sexual abuse, and the court found that course of conduct was continuing. And here, the court found domestic abuse pursuant to the orders for protection that were the subsequent orders for protection. But then the court found that there was escalating behavior, and that based on that, because... Really, we can't stop at the analysis of a domestic abuse.
But you agree that
incident.
It's proper to consider that.
Absolutely. In the totality of the circumstances, I think it's very clear from the case law that we look at everything. And we look at the severity of the abuse, and we look at the frequency of the abuse, and we look at whether it's likely the abuse will continue.
Well, isn't it really a clearly erroneous standard that we should be applying here?
As far as the...
The findings.
That
she's reasonably in fear of physical harm.
And I think with that, Your Honor, we need to look at sufficiency of the evidence. We need to look at, is there enough? Did the court have enough evidence to make this kind of finding?
Except, as I understand, clearly erroneous, I don't think it goes that far. Is there any evidence in the record that would support that finding?
Okay.
And... is it so out of, you know, is it just totally unreasonable that there's been a manifest injustice or mistake made?
Right, that there's been a mistake. And we would assert that is the case, Your Honor. All that's in the record, because basically, as we see it, this was a tack-on. This was a second thought. Basically, the whole petition is based on the children. The whole petition was based on Warren and what happened with Warren. The police report has nothing to do with the respondent. This, most of the testimony, if not 90% of the testimony, is regarding Warren. So
but
we look at the testimony.
But the court still had detailed findings as to why the court concluded that petitioner is in reasonable fear of physical harm.
Well, the court's findings say that there was escalating harm, that there was escalating threats. First, that there's domestic abuse as found in prior OFPs, but then that there was escalating behavior. But if you look at the testimony, the escalating behavior, the only behavior that was testified to was that she said that Mr. Johnson was following her to work. That there were times that he was following her to work. When the court asked when, she said, oh, for my whole entire life. First of all, that doesn't give rise to escalating behavior. It's flippant. It's an off-the-cuff remark, and it gives nothing for the court to look at the totality of the circumstances. The court needs to know, when did this happen? Where did this happen? How often did this happen? None of that is in the record.
She talked about when she went into work and she sat down and all of a sudden she'd get a text message.
That was for the text messages, exactly. Yep. And I will get to that regarding with regard to my client following the respondent to work. She did later say that this was during her time when she worked at Polaris, which was years before. So again, the timing matters. She didn't bring up an OFP years before. As far as the text messages, she testifies later that these text messages are not threatening, they're not harassing, they're annoying.
But again, I don't know if under Tom, if we look at that Thomas case, I mean, again, that was 3 years. So that there really been no contact. And the court said it doesn't matter, she still has a reasonable fear.
I think we can differentiate for two reasons, Your Honor. First of all, the last time there was an order for protection where there was any kind, well, first of all, there were no findings in 2003. There was testimony from the respondent from what happened in 2003, but that's 16 years ago. The parties went on to reconcile, have two children, get divorced, all kinds of things happened in 16 years. The only other time that there was an order for protection was during the divorce, during the time that all of the experts, including the guardian ad litem, the custody evaluator, the children's therapist, all found respondent not credible. They found that every time she makes an allegation regarding the appellant, she's not credible. This is a pattern that continues. So, first of all, as far as 2010, the OFP for 2010, Judge Aldridge found that based on 2003, so we go back to the
Counsel,
OFP.
Your time is about up. If you can finish your answer and then conclude, I'd appreciate
Absolutely,
it.
Your Honor. So if 2010, the only act of harassment was one act on October 3rd, 2009. So basically what we're saying is there's no sufficiency of evidence. The text messages were annoying. They were creepy because they happened at the time that she actually got to her office, which is probably the time that most people get to their office. Following at work, there's no indication of when that actually happened, what day, what time, where was it. None of those, there's nothing in the evidence. We're not talking about looking at contrary evidence. There isn't any evidence. There's nothing that actually can, that where the court can look at the totality of the circumstances and make a finding that there's something more than 2009, more than 2003. There's nothing since that time to allow for another order for protection, and we can't allow for orders for protection to be issued based on evidence that's already been heard from the prior order for protection, or we have a continual punishment for the same infraction. Thank you.
Thank you. Well argued and well briefed. The matter will be decided within the statutory time frame. Thank you. We will now be in recess until 2 p.m.
All rise.